A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Zachary Fort from the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association here in just a moment or two. The legislative session underway at the Roundhouse in Santa Fe in just a matter of days. One big bad gun control bill has already been pre-filed. There are likely more bills on the way. And we'll be taking a look, you know, at what's going on in other states around the country as well as we in the coming days as we get closer to the start of legislative sessions. I should note, by the way, I have mentioned before on this program that in Virginia, the deadline for legislation to be pre-filed before the start of the session is tomorrow, January 14th. That's because the session starts on January 14th. But the last day to actually file bills is not until January 23rd. The reason why that's important is because that is after the Virginia Citizens Defense League's Lobby Day activities will be on January 19th. So it is entirely possible, if not likely, that Democrats are going to hold back some gun control bills until after gun owners have showed up at the state capitol to rally in defense of their right to keep and bear arms. So, you know, listen, if tomorrow comes and goes and we don't see a permit to purchase bill in Virginia, don't think that that means we're off the hook here, right? We know that more bills are coming. And again, the deadline to actually file legislation for this session is not until January 23rd. VCDL's lobby day is January 19th. And again, I suspect that several bad bills are going to be held back until after gun owners leave Richmond next week. All right, with that in mind, let's turn our attention to what's going on in the state of New Mexico, where, again, gun owners are subject to the anti-gun machinations of New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. Thankfully, the governor is term limited this year, but she's trying to go out, no pun intended, with a bang and to enact something that has been on her anti-gun agenda for a number of years. A sweeping ban on semi-automatic firearms. Take a look and a listen. Zach, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Hey, thanks for having me on. We appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, so yesterday on the program, we were talking a lot about what's going on in Virginia, the gun control bills that are dropping. And I you know, I feel more closely connected to you this year, Zach, because we're dealing with a lot of the same things that you're going to be dealing with in New Mexico, unfortunately. We know that Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has been pushing for a semi-auto ban for, you know, several sessions. Is she at it again this year?
Absolutely. You know, for people who are not aware, so Michelle Lujan Grisham, the most anti-gun governor in the country, as we like to refer to her here as, this is her last regular session as governor of New Mexico. You know, she's term limited. This is her second term. She will be replaced by another governor next year. This is her last chance that she has to try to pass a rifle ban as governor. So we've already seen one rifle ban bill filed. It actually is kind of this big omnibus bill that actually includes a lot of things. It has a ban on rifles, ban on magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. It has state level regulations on FFLs. It has a state database of firearms purchased in the state of New Mexico that would belong to the state. It's this big omnibus bill, but it does explicitly include a rifle ban. That's one rifle ban that we've seen filed. We are actually expecting we may see a second one, a different variation of what they've done in the past, because this concept kind of do this new big omnibus bill we just saw filed by Senator O'Malley and Representative Romero. That's a newer bill. We haven't seen that before. Representative Romero talked this past fall about doing that. We're still expecting, quite frankly, another rifle ban bill that's kind of more similar to what they've run in the past, which is similar to legislation we saw from Senator Heinrich, New Mexico federal Senator Heinrich in the United States Senate, where basically banning gas-operated firearms, whether that be rifles or shotguns.
Yeah, that's the you know, if we think about you know, how these semi-auto bans operate, there's sort of the, I call it the Feinstein model, which is the features-based test, right? It's any centerfire semi-automatic firearm that can accept a detachable magazine and has, you know, one of numerous features. That's the gun ban bill that got introduced in Virginia. I'm expecting additional rifle bans to be dropped here as well. And then, as you say, there was the, I think it's called the Go Safe Act from Martin Heinrich, Angus King, which basically bans all centerfire gas-operated semi-automatic rifles, regardless of what features it has, right? That's so this is a more, I would say, a more sweeping gun ban. What is the language in that omnibus bill? Is it more of the Feinstein style gun ban, the features test?
No, they explicitly refer to gas-operated fire, okay, semi-automatic gas-operated firearms in that bill, which it would include, your semi-automatic rifles that are largely gas-operated, semi-automatic shotguns that are gas-operated, and then also any type of like AR, AK pistols, because they have the pistol, AK and AR pistols have the same operation as the rifles.
You know, in addition to this big omnibus bill that you're seeing and the rifle ban that you're expecting as well, I want to talk a little bit more actually about the features of that omnibus bill, because I saw an op-ed from I can't remember the name of the state senator, but she wrote about the gun dealer licensing aspect of this.
Yeah, it was a Senator Brantley.
I think it was. Yeah. And again, you know, the idea here is we're not just going after gun owners, but we're going after gun sellers. As if they're the problem, as if we're the problem. The problem, Zach, are violent criminals. And frankly, in a lot of cases, it seems like in New Mexico right now, the problem are violent juveniles and a juvenile justice system that is not equipped or designed to deal with violent repeat offenders.
Absolutely. So you bring up a great point. There's a couple things I want to hit on here really quickly. So the aspect of going after gun stores in terms of accusing them of being an active participant in straw purchases, this is an idea we actually saw from Everytown this past fall. They had somebody who used to work for the ATF, now works for Everytown. They did some kind of study on firearm tracing. They found that a lot of the firearms that were used in crimes in New Mexico were purchased at an FFL in New Mexico. So they determined that the only way this could have happened is if gun stores are just facilitating straw purchases all day long. They act as though in the state that has leading property crime rates, that guns never get stolen. This is absolute insanity. Like, you don't think firearms get stolen in a state that literally does not prosecute you if you steal a firearm? There have been people who have driven trucks into gun stores to steal firearms, and then they get, 90 days probation if they get caught. It's insanity. And, talking about, New Mexico's criminal justice system, I mean, anybody who's been listening to anything I say, you can go back on podcast appearances, op-eds I've done for years. I have been saying consistently, when you do not prosecute crime, when you do not enforce the law and prosecute crime, you teach people that crime is legal. Because it is. Because if somebody gets caught stealing a firearm, if there's no consequences, you told them, okay, like, go do it again. That's what you're teaching these people. And we have a criminal justice system that does not deter people from crime. It reinforces crime because they learn they can get away with it. And this perpetuates year after year, and then it just sucks in younger and younger kids. It's absolutely horrifying, the number of younger kids that are getting involved in serious crime in New Mexico. We have really fundamental issues because we're not holding people accountable when we need to. We're just deferring it, doing whatever, letting them run free, and not prosecuting. It's this mentality that we've had. The Attorney General of our state, Raul Torres, this is the mentality he had when he was district attorney in Bernalillo County. Crime skyrocketed when he was district attorney because they weren't prosecuting stuff, and he got a promotion for it. Because too many people in the state don't realize what's happening at these prosecution levels when we're not enforcing the law, we're not prosecuting when people do get caught, and then people are just walking free, and there's zero consequences. And we're just living, and this is the direct result of the zero consequence society we've created, where people commit crime and we don't do anything until somebody murders somebody. And then we act like, oh, now we need to go take away the guns because this person who had committed 5 prior crimes were never held accountable for now murdered somebody.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. And, again, when we're talking about juveniles in particular, I understand the primary purpose of the juvenile justice system is supposed to be rehabilitation, right? We don't want to see these 13-year-olds locked up for the rest of their lives. But at some point, when you've got, a 14-year-old with multiple crimes to their name, I would say the best route to rehabilitation is actually to remove them from society for a while and to, provide them with that intensive supervision and consequences. As you say, consequences for their actions. If somebody steals a car, rams it into a gun store, is gone in 60 seconds with tens of thousands of dollars in firearms. And as you say, they walk away with 90 days probation. That does send a message. It's just not the message that I think society should be sending, right? Because it sends that message of not a big deal. If you get caught, you get a slap on the wrist and you'll soon be free. And this is a choice that lawmakers are making, right? They make this conscious choice to vilify law-abiding gun owners, to demonize FFLs, and to excuse the actions of these criminals. That is their choice.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, talking about these juvenile kids, yes, we need to remove them from the situation that they're in, because the situation that they're in is clearly not teaching them, guiding them into decisions that they need to be making to be a productive, you know, upstanding member of society. Like, they're, the situation they're in, whether that's the parents are involved or maybe not be involved, whatever the situation they're in is clearly not working for them. We need to put them in a different situation. I don't believe we need to lock up these people. I think a lot of them could actually turn their lives around given the right situation to be put into. But the situation they're in, when you have 14-year-olds committing drive-by shootings regularly, is clearly something that's very clearly not working right. And we need to remove them from that situation and put them in a better situation that's such that they can grow up to meet their potential in life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I got to ask, you know, the legislature has been reluctant to go along with Governor Luann Grisham's gun ban plans. I mean, they've mm-hmm. tried to work with her. I think it's some other areas, right? She wanted that 14-day waiting period. They said, all right, well, we'll give you a week-long waiting period, which, by the way, has been struck down by the courts, if I recall.
Yes. So basically, the original federal judge in New Mexico upheld the law when they asked for the injunction, saying, no, we don't think you're going to win. The 10th Circuit up in Denver, where, you know, Mexico is part of the 10th Circuit. So the 10th Circuit up in Denver, they actually said no. A three-judge panel said, no, this law is likely unconstitutional. And then the Mexico governor asked for an en banc appeal. The full 10th Circuit denied the en banc appeal, saying, no, we're going to let the decision from the three-judge panel stand. As it stands right now, we're basically just waiting on the judge in New Mexico to actually issue the injunction in the case. There's been a lot of feet dragging, quite frankly, from the federal judges in New Mexico in actually issuing this injunction. So that's what we're kind of waiting on today, because we have an order from the 10th Circuit saying this is likely unconstitutional, but until the actual injunction is issued, the law is being enforced.
Okay. So, you know, do you think there are some Democrat lawmakers who are maybe a little gun shy about following the governor's lead here? I mean, you know, she tried to ban concealed carry in the entirety of Albuquerque and Bernalillo County, right? She was sued over that. She said, well, okay, well, there are parks and playgrounds. She was sued over that and lost a very narrow ruling to say, well, maybe playgrounds, you can ban concealed carry. Now with the waiting periods, 10th Circuit smacks that down. It seems to me that, you know, I mean, if I were a Democrat lawmaker, I don't think I'd be following the governor's lead on these bills. So has she burned any bridges, do you think, when it comes to her gun control machinations at the Roundhouse?
Absolutely. You know, we firmly believe that New Mexicans are pro Second Amendment. You know, people fall in different political camps for different reasons, and that's probably a whole nother discussion as to why some Democrat gun owners vote for Democrats who vote for gun control. That's probably a discussion for another day. But New Mexico is a pro-gun state. A lot of legislators know this, so there are a lot of Democrats who are pro-gun. There are quite a few Democrats, you know, on the House side who are actually very pro-gun, and we really support and appreciate these people. You know, Mexico Shooting Sports Association, we're not a partisan organization. So anybody who is pro-gun, whether they be Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, we support them. So we have a lot of phenomenal Democrats in our state legislature who are pro-gun, who we work with on stuff, and we anticipate we will continue to see support from those pro-gun Democrats to help us fight back against this stuff. Because yes, New Mexicans are pro-Second Amendment, where people love their firearm rights out here. Out here, it's a way of life in a lot of ways, and across our beautiful state. So yes, there's a lot of Democrats we work with, we'll continue to work with, and these bills have failed before. We know who we need to work with, we know what you need to do. We're going to go out and continue to do what we can to stop these bills from passing.
How long is this year's session?
So this year is a 30-day session. It's basically a sprint. It's 1 month, basically. And the session is really supposed to be just a budget session. You know, you come in, you pass the budget, you return home to work. Because New Mexico, for most of its history, was in a largely agricultural state. You know, you meet, and that's why they meet during the winter, because, you know, people are not out farming and, you know, during the winter. So when you have these 30-day sessions, it's supposed to be, you know, you come in during the winter, you know, you pass a budget, you go home. But what's happened is through, you know, particularly with this governor, you see a lot of non-budget stuff being introduced. So basically what actually has to happen for gun control to be added to the session agenda, the governor has to basically issue a message saying, yes, I want to hear gun control. Now, she's done that every single 30-day session in the past, so we expect it to happen in the future. It'd be crazy not to, and she's done it every single time before. Yeah. But you actually, the governor has to go out of her way to hear gun control in a 30-day budget session in New Mexico.
Okay, and when does the session start?
It starts January 20th.
Okay.
So here in about a week. Yep, a week from today, we're going to be kicking this off, and it's, you know, the 30-day sessions, they're fast. Things move really quickly. You don't have a lot of time on this stuff. So if you are in New Mexico, if you want to be paying attention to what's going on in Mexico, please, you know, follow us on social media, subscribe to our email alerts at nmssa.org. We will be sending out stuff in real time, and we can get out stuff faster than anybody else can. We put out stuff oftentimes live as it happens in committees, on the floor, putting stuff out in real time, because yes, things move really fast in New Mexico in these 30-day sessions. It's going to start, and they're going to be in committee hearings that afternoon, potentially hearing bills. So I really encourage people, if you're in New Mexico, if you care about what's going on in New Mexico, pay attention, because this stuff moves really quickly.
Absolutely. We'll be hopefully able to grab you, you know, at least once or twice during the 30-day session as well to get some updates. Before we let you go, I got to ask, are there any bills that the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association is supporting that have either been filed or you think will be filed?
So there are a couple bills that have been filed or will be filed that we support. The problem is there's a good chance they won't necessarily be heard.
Right.
There are some updates to the Concealed Carry Act that we would like to see made. Now, ultimately, New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, we support constitutional carry. And actually, in New Mexico, you can open carry without a permit. Mm-hmm. You don't need a permit to open carry in New Mexico. And I encourage people, you know, use judgment discretion when open carrying, as always, particularly in metro areas. But you don't need a permit to open carry. So we actually have constitutional open carry. You need a permit to conceal carry in New Mexico. And we would like to see our state become a, you know, permitless carry state, but ultimately that's probably politically further away from where we are. So what we do try to do is work with how can we make it easier to get a permit, make the system less onerous, and make it easier for people to exercise their rights. So there's some areas we're looking at in concealed carry, you know, it's smaller changes there to ultimately make it easier for people to exercise their right to carry a firearm.
Okay.
We'll see what actually gets heard, but that's kind of one of the areas we work on.
Yeah. And I realize the difficulty, again, with an anti-gun governor, right? It would be helpful to have a veto-proof majority for these bills. Just decides once again to screw with the Second Amendment rights of New Mexicans. But Zach, as always, I really appreciate you carving out a few minutes. I know that you're a very busy guy, and it's a very busy time for gun owners in New Mexico. Where can folks find the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association on social media?
Yes, so we are on X, Facebook, and Instagram as New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. You can also go to our website, nmssa.org. Please go follow us there. During the legislative session, we post stuff really regularly because things move so quickly.
Absolutely. Zach Ford, again, thank you so much for joining us on the program today, and I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the time.
My thanks to Zach for joining us on the program. And looking forward to talking to him once the session begins. That 30-day session does fly by, but hopefully we'll be able to grab him at least once or twice as events warrant. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Yesterday, we talked about a case out of Harris County, Texas. Well, today we're talking about a case out of Harris County, Texas, too. I hate to go back to the same well. But I saw this headline and I did some digging, and yeah, this is really egregious here. So this is from Click2 Houston. Suspect in UH credit union robbery has long criminal past, including sexual assault allegation. What we know about him? Well, what we know is that this guy should have been behind bars, quite honestly. So according to Click2 Houston, 24-year-old Jerome Rubin appeared in court this week after he was arrested in connection with an armed robbery on the campus of the University of Houston at the TDECU Credit Union. This was back on January the 7th. Law enforcement sources say that Rubin was wearing a hijab, a black dress, and what a bank employee described as fake breasts. They also said officers recovered those items along with a large amount of cash when Rubin was pulled over 2 days later driving the same vehicle that he used, allegedly, to flee the robbery. Why on earth you would want to keep that in your car? Never mind, I'm not going there. Anyway, according to Click2 Houston, Rubin has a lengthy criminal history spanning multiple counties. He's 24 years old. Keep that in mind. In Galveston County, records list misdemeanors and traffic cases, along with a burglary conviction from 2022 that resulted in nothing more than probation. He later violated that probation and was sentenced to 6 months behind bars for burglary. In Harris County, Rubin was previously accused of robbing a pizza delivery driver at gunpoint, stealing the victim's car and his stuff, and Rubin was placed on probation for that crime as well. And again, he violated that probation. One condition of the probation was that he stay off the campus of the University of Houston. Court records show that Rubin also is accused of kidnapping and sexually assaulting a woman in Baytown, Texas, last December, while he was on probation for another case. He now faces charges of aggravated kidnapping, aggravated sexual assault, and aggravated robbery, and has also now been charged with this bank robbery on the campus of the University of Houston. Aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon, given a $2 million bond. Bond set at $3 million for the Baytown case, bringing his total bond to $5 million. He is next scheduled in court on February 17th. And again, why was he even out? You rob somebody at gunpoint, you steal their car, you shouldn't get probation for that. That is a violent felony offense. And that wasn't his first offense. I'm flummoxed here. Except I'm not really. Because again, even in a red state like Texas, you've got big blue cities like Houston with soft on crime prosecutors, with soft on crime judges, with a criminal justice system that is about ensuring fairness for the convicted criminal as opposed to providing justice for the victims of these crimes. And here you have a 24-year-old with a rap sheet that would make a man twice his age blush and very little time behind bars to show for it. Unfortunately, you know, again, these stories are not limited to Houston, Texas. No shortage of these stories each and every day. Hopefully we won't do a trifecta and have another case from the Houston area tomorrow. But Jerome Rubin is today's recidivist report. On to today's armed citizen story, also from the Lone Star State, where a Fort Worth homeowner fatally shot a man trying to enter a locked garage. That wasn't why he shot the man, though. The headline, I think, is a little misleading here. According to the Fort Worth police, the homeowner encountered the burglar trying to enter that locked garage on the homeowner's property. This is about 6 a.m. yesterday morning. But the homeowner told the guy to leave. So he didn't see the guy and just start banging away. He said, "Hey, what are you doing? Get out of here." And according to the homeowner, he turned and was aggressively approaching him. Rather than leaving the property, he started going after the homeowner. That's when the homeowner fired at the burglar, shooting him at least once in the torso. Burglar walked or ran from the home, collapsed, and then passed away on the sidewalk not far away. The homeowner did call 911 to report the encounter and to call for medical personnel. He remained at his home, reportedly cooperating with the investigation, hopefully with the help of his attorney. Police have not arrested or charged the homeowner with any crime at this point. You know, in Texas, you are allowed to defend your property under some circumstances, but in this case, I don't think that really was what was going on here. The initial response from the homeowner, at least according to the homeowner himself, was, "I tried to get him to leave." And only again when he began to approach him in a threatening manner did the homeowner act in self-defense. So we'll keep our eyes on this story and bring you any more details and updates as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And an off-duty police officer in Louisiana who rescued a truck driver after a crash on an interstate in Alabama. Boy, you talk about being in the right place at the right time. Sergeant T. Sheeby, who works at the Louisiana State University campus there in Baton Rouge, saw the wreck after a semi suffered a tire blowout and then overturned on the interstate, the driver trapped inside. Sheeby stopped his car, ran out into the median where the semi had flipped over. According to authorities, assessed the scene and was able to extricate the injured driver by cutting him free and then kind of guiding him out through the windshield, which actually shattered in the crash. After he was able to get that driver out of the cab of the truck, He continued providing care. Another motorist brought a first aid kit to the scene, and Shibi assisted in controlling bleeding, dressing the driver's injuries until EMS personnel arrived on the scene. LSU police say his willingness to act, regardless of duty status or location, is an example of the dedication of our officers to bring public safety every day. And again, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing for a stranger in need. Sergeant T. Shibi with the LSU police there in Baton Rouge, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I do encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And tomorrow we're going to be talking with Larry Keene on the program from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Got a busy conversation ahead. I want to talk about SHOT Show, which is going to be happening next week. I will not be in attendance, unfortunately. I was supposed to have I'll get into that later, but I will not be in attendance at SHOT Show, unfortunately. But I also want to talk with Larry about what's going on with the ATF in the early days of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and its implementation, the zeroing out of the $200 transfer tax on the most NFA items. It seems like the ATF is doing a decent job of processing these requests. I have seen some complaints. Eric Burleson, representative from Missouri, complaining that the ATF still requiring registration of these NFA items. I got to say, I don't think that's the NFA. I mean, I don't think that's the ATF's purview to say, no, you don't need to register. This is still part of the law. We went through this before. You know, it was Congress's intent to get rid of both of the tax and the registration requirement. That clearly was the congressional intent. But the Senate parliamentarian ruled that the registration, removing the registration, was a policy move. It was not a budget move. It could not stay in the reconciliation bill. And I don't think it's up to the ATF to just ignore existing federal law. As much as I would like to see them do that, I don't think that they can do that. And I really don't think we want to get into the habit of the federal government ignoring laws that they don't like, because that could turn around and bite gun owners in the butt one day if a Democratic administration decides, you know what, we're not going to pay any attention to these laws that protect gun owners and their right to keep and bear arms. So we'll talk about this with Larry Keene again on tomorrow's program. I encourage you to check that out, but also please do check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, where we're keeping you abreast on all of the latest news impacting your right to keep and bear arms. In the meantime, have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.